Welcome back to the Mutica Movie Club podcast. I'm John Kissel. With me tonight is Shane Sentner.
Yo.
Sean Riley.
Hey there.
And J.R. Peters.
What's Gucci?
Here at the Mutica Movie Club, we are a small group of friends who select three movies every month. We watch those movies. We write about those movies at MuticaMovie.club. And then at the end of the month, we talk about said three movies. This last month, we discussed Sound of Metal, The Handmaiden, and I Care a Lot. We're going to start with The Sound of Metal. This is a movie on Amazon Prime, directed by Darius Marder, about a drummer in a punk band who is living like an RV-style life, not unlike Nomadland from last month, but going from gigs with his girlfriend, and all of a sudden his hearing very abruptly goes away, and he has to adjust to the death of his old life and what his new life is going to look like, and if he can in any way reconcile the two of those things. Around the horn real quick, Shane, what did you think of Sound of Metal?
This was a really good, great performance. Riz Ahmed, is that it?
Riz Ahmed.
Riz Ahmed. The other actor whose name I don't know.
Sure, the counselor?
The counselor, yeah.
Paul Racy.
Yeah, I mean, just outstanding.
Both nominated for Oscars.
And a little too convenient on the story, but I really like this movie.
All right, we'll get into that. Riley, what'd you think about Sound of Metal?
Thought it was very good. I think I was graded it just a little bit lower than you guys based on your post. And I think my grade probably is based on my modern, I'm going to read my whatever's going on my iPhone at any slow point in the movie where I get bored.
Okay. JR?
I thought this movie was great. Obviously, Paul Racy and Riz Ahmed. Outstanding performances for both of them. I think Riz Ahmed should win the Oscar. I think he should get it. But just in general, I really enjoyed the movie. I don't really have any complaints that I can think about. Most of the time I can tell you complain about at least something. But like looking back, I'm like, there were a couple slow points, but I was okay with that. And like, just, I liked everything about it.
Before we move on from the Oscar stuff, it's going to be weird when, because I agree with you, I think Ahmed should win from what I've seen. But it's going to be weird when Chadwick Boseman wins and we're going to be like, well, okay, that's good too. Right?
Chadwick Boseman is likely to win, yes, Best Actor for Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. And I think he's really bad in it, personally.
I haven't seen that, so I need to watch.
All right, the people, I don't understand.
John, just say you don't like black people.
Hang on. I watched Get On Up like a month or two ago, where he played James Brown. And I thought he was amazing in that. And like, if he was going to win an Oscar for anything, it should have been, you know, in 2014. I think he's really bad in Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, and it's going to be really weird when he wins, compared to get my quick thoughts in about Sound of Metal, compared to Riz Ahmed, who I think gives the year's best like actor performance in this movie. I think he is fantastic. Paul Racy, who is in fact a career actor and not just some guy they pulled off the street who works in a deaf counseling camp, he's giving just perfectly naturalistic performance, and he is an actor. This isn't his life. He's not actually deaf. He's incredible. The movie does amazing things with its sound design in a way that I can't think of another movie that's done anything like that. Really giving you a taste of what it's like to be a deaf person. There's like the scenes from the daughter's perspective in A Quiet Place, but that's not the same. That's really just like a complete dropping out of sound.
The only other thing I could think is war movies where you get the tinnitus after a bomb goes off.
Sure, yeah.
Like, that's the only thing I could think of that could compare to what they did in this movie, like you said.
Yeah, and this is a sustained, like, throughout the movie. It's not just pure silence. It is like his what his body would sound like the vibrations his body is making. And then once he gets the cochlear implants, the sound of that, which we'll get into a little in this next topic about. I suspect Sound of Metal, and let's be clear, I don't know that a huge number of people saw this movie. If you want to talk about the Oscars this year, like, these movies, all these movies that were released, if they were released in theaters, they would have cumulatively made like $50 million, I feel like. Like Sound of Metal, if it would have made $10 million in like a regular period, that's a huge success.
Are we talking about the three movies for tonight they were talking about, or just...
It's all like the Best Picture Oscars. Okay, it's a very weird Oscar year. Well, like, yeah, Nomadland is probably going to win, and Nomadland would have made like $10 to $15 million.
Yeah.
That would have been too much money for that movie to win.
Wow. All right, well,
moving along.
I do want to say before we move on too much here, I'm going to retroactively award you 10 extra SAT points for knowing tinnitus. That's good.
Yeah.
Like, I watch Archer.
Oh, is that from Archer?
He's always yelling about having tinnitus. When people are like, almost every episode, someone shoots a gun next to his ear. By the way, rest in peace to the mom.
Yes, who had one of my all-time favorite abortion jokes in Archer. It's something about scraping them all into a and forming one whole baby. I don't know. I'm paraphrasing badly. Yes, Jessica Walters?
Walter. Yeah.
Walter.
With a T.
We love her so much.
White. Jessica Walter.
Jessica Walter White. Remove the white. Yeah.
Anyways, I suspect Sound of Metal is like the first time anyone has like become familiar with like deaf activist groups. I wrote a lot of my review about the first time I learned about this semi-peculiar, like counterintuitive rights movement, where like ER had a subplot about Dr. Benton, who is a black surgeon, JR, and who was arguably the best character on the show.
Why are you singling out
my guy,
black person in this episode, John?
Anyways,
more racism.
Anyways, his son was deaf, and the surgeon's first impulse is to like, let's get this fixed, let's solve this problem. And I think for a whole season they went back and forth about whether or not to do this, because like languages and culture has grown up around being deaf, and if everybody just got cochlear implants slapped into their brains, then that all goes away. And like, what's the difference between wiping out some Brazilian tribe that's figured out all their own culture and like doing that same essential thing to deaf people?
Yeah. And to hop onto that, because of this movie, you know, I searched Sound of Metal, right? And then of course all this deaf stuff comes up. Then Google starts recommending all this stuff. I didn't realize, like, I knew it was ASL, but I didn't realize it stood for American Sign Language. So then I was like, oh shit, there's like people that know ASL are not going to be able to go to like other countries and sign with people, because it's like there's like German Sign Language and all this stuff. And then also there is AASL, like African American Sign Language, that's like Ebonics version of like just like not even joking, just like wild shit like that. I saw, I was like, you know, then I ended up for like a week like reading a bunch of articles about this.
Sure.
Yeah.
And like 2 years later, ASL kind of like scoops in to ASL, and ASL has to come up with like stranger and, or like newer and newer.
They just have to keep making up shit.
So what would be the Urban Dictionary of the ASL to AASL? Like what would that be titled?
Yeah. That's a good question.
Is it just all the like the flipping people off, the different ways to flip the bird? Just like pictures of that? It has it.
Just the signs get lower and lower on the body, I would imagine.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, I'd been around these groups just because of being in weird liberal Twitter circles, and you get uber woke liberals getting offended on behalf of other people a lot in my timeline. And but I know enough not to talk about it. So
I think Sound of Metal is like clearly on the side of like deaf activists, I think.
I don't know.
And I think they make the best case that anyone's ever made in their favor to hearing people by actually, and again, with Darius Marder's sound design, actually showing what it is like to have a cochlear implant,
yeah,
which I trust to be accurate. Maybe it's not. Maybe there are better versions of it, but it sounds torturous. It sounds worse than being deaf.
Yeah, that was ableist right there, John. That I thought they were actually a pretty good job of letting you decide on your own where it's at. They didn't.
I very much disagree. Like he's wrong. The movie thinks he's wrong. Like he's so mean to Paul Racy.
Well, yeah.
I don't think that.
As an angel and the ideal that the movie is like heading towards.
I don't think so. I think they present it more as Paul Racy's a guy who is doing his thing and has set a line and this man just crossed it and he's like, I can't help you anymore. I didn't see it as doing, you know, Paul Racy's the angel and Riz Ahmed, which I don't remember his character's name, but Riz Ahmed is doing, you know, is going against an angel. It was just like, hey man, you're in a place where these people are not going to be doing this. And so I need, like, we've decided here that we're going to live deaf. We're not going to try to do anything else. We're going to make lives deaf. And then Riz Ahmed goes against that. And so he's got to kick him out. And it's just that, like that.
Yeah. I think they, it's really informed by, the addiction part of that, the addiction part of this whole thing where there is like a hard line when it comes to, sober houses. Right. So that is his house is modeled off of what I know about AA and sobriety.
We get a good sense of his life, and maybe this is my prejudice against punk bands.
Go on, I'm here.
But we get a picture of his life before, when he has hearing and when his hearing is deteriorating. We get a picture of his life when he is at this compound. And one is inarguably better. Like he and his girlfriend, who's played by Libby Cook, I don't remember her character's name either, but we're going to call her Blonde Eyebrows, I suppose, which is very disorienting. Very disorienting, the Blonde Eyebrows.
It is distracting, yeah.
Punk bands.
I'm glad now you've offended the deaf community and the Blonde Eyebrows.
No, we're still on the up and up with the deaf community.
Keep going. Okay.
We have a lot of fans in the deaf community, so, I mean, I don't necessarily know how they are receiving our podcast. I've read the transcripts that somebody is doing of our podcast.
Yeah.
I don't know who's doing. I don't think we've asked for that. Someone did it.
It's a thankless job.
Yeah, and it doesn't pay very well. Yeah, because they're real bad at it, or we suck at talking. It's one or the other.
Yeah.
Maybe both.
Might be both. We get a picture of his life in both places. One is inarguably better, and the end of the movie isn't him getting the exact right adjustment in his cochlear implants. It's him taking them out. And having the thing that Paul Racy's character has been pushing him towards the entire movie. Like the dismissiveness of the doctor towards Ruben, Riz Ahmed's character, his wildly inaccurate expectations of what's going to happen, his terrible plans of like how he's going to be able to sell his RV and then get it back at like a 10% markup, and he's going to get the money from somewhere. Like if I think this movie makes a mistake, it's in that period between when he leaves the compound and when he has to go in and get the implants put in. Because he's homeless in that period of time. Like, what is he doing? He has enough open scars on his head.
Yeah.
That's a period that's kind of missing.
Maybe it's because I listened to too much Dr. Drew and Loveline stuff and addiction stuff. Where this is like, dudes like this are just survivors. And they're fine with that. This is their hustle every day. They never slow down. And that's, I think, one part of this movie I really enjoyed was they will tell you if you start AA and if you have a counselor, everyone's like, do not get in a relationship with someone you've met in AA. And that's exactly what happened here.
And you get a sense of that's how they got together.
Yeah. And so that's 100% how they got together. And then you just really just kind of stretching along because you've really never worked on yourself, which I think that's why this movie works so well. It's like he's working on himself the whole time. That's why I don't think it really judges the implants. I think it just judges it for him and his situation. We're saying you need it's person dependent.
Sure. And the movie connects addiction to disability in the sense of like, you can't get back to the period of time before. You're never going to get that. He was a heroin user. You're never going to, you know, the old saw about heroin is you're chasing that first time, but you're never going to get there. It's impossible to get there. Just like he's never going to get to the point in his life when he could hear again. When he could hear again at like full strength, without like the scratchy cochlear implants, like that's it's gone and it's gone forever. And you're going to be chasing a pale imitation of it if you can't like let it go and move on. So I did prefer this movie as a disability movie as opposed to an addiction movie, because I find addiction movies, I don't know, boring and kind of the same.
Yeah.
And I think, and what was new about this movie was the sound design and the intensity of the acting. Not that other movies don't have intense acting, but just that combination. So I think I connected to it more in that way. We mentioned the punk band. If he was in a better band, if he played a different genre of music, maybe I'm just assuming you guys all feel the same way about screechy punk bands as I do. Am I wrong about that?
I don't think that it had any impact on whether or not he was sympathetic. I mean, I could barely have the volume on my TV during the parts that they were in concert, but that didn't make Ruben any less sympathetic.
Sure. I mean, if his old life looked better because he was actually playing better music, would that have changed the movie for you at all? Dude, like, oh, you're trying so hard to get back to this previous life. If the viewer thinks that previous life was sonically terrible and a trial to get through moment to moment, I don't know.
Actually, you think
but the whole thing is his life surrounds music. So it's like if John
does it.
John, right? Like. If it does it, I mean, what happens if you go blind? You're out here watching shit movies every once in a while, right? And so if somebody shows your life, well, you watching fucking, I don't know, the original Justice League or some shit?
No. Absolutely.
John's been trying to go blind for 20 years.
You get what I'm saying? Like, it just matters what he was doing, and his thing was music, and so it's like. Like, you take the music away, you got sympathy for him. It doesn't matter.
It was a tongue-in-cheek.
Okay, but sorry.
They couldn't have picked, for my mind, they could not have picked a more, like, if this band falls apart, it's kind of a good thing. Because they're not putting music out into the world anymore.
Actually, I mean, I think, it does show his commitment to being in this really niche.
They seem to be having some level of success.
Yeah, I mean, but you can do that, and like, when you have, like, a niche like that. That's why... People like this band is who travels to East Atlanta over here. Because I have a buddy who has this tiny house. I'm like, who rents your fucking tiny house in East Atlanta? He's like, all these dudes who follow these really small bands. And they're super into them. So it's a thing. Yeah.
Okay. What else? I referenced in my review, a review that I just want to throw out to my aunt, Christina Wasson.
Yay.
She really loved this review. So thank you, Aunt Chrissy. Appreciate that. his lines to Paul Racy, like in their big confrontation about not wanting to disappear. We watched three movies this month, two of which are about con artists, one of which is about a con artist whose victims are extremely vulnerable people. And Ruben being so cruel to Paul Racy in that confrontation scene might be the worst thing that we witnessed this last month. It's so hard to see Ruben call Paul Racy's life essentially useless and meaningless after we've spent all this time at the camp when he's with the kids and all that really, really good stuff. And it's a testament to Riz Ahmed's performance, I think, that you just don't immediately wash your hands of him at that moment because it's such a fucking dick thing to do.
Yeah,
it's very much.
But it makes sense.
The movie laying its cards out, also about a guy who's like resistant to change, and he's dedicated to a specific life plan. As weird and as meaningless as I might think his life plan is, and how he's putting trash out into the world. Whatever, people seem to like it.
John, I could hear your voice shake a little bit, like describing this and knowing the impact it had on you. But I think something that was missing in the movie is understanding that Ruben's a victim here too. I didn't think there was a whole lot of empathy from Racy to Ruben for what he was going through. It's just, this is a deaf community. You've got to just adapt and deal with it. And there was no kind of journey to get there. It was just, you have to figure it out and start being deaf.
Sure. Yeah. And some of that is the rigidness of like deaf activist ideology, I would say, where like this, there is an option that exists. It's not good by any means, provided that Sound and Metal is like giving an accurate representation of what it is like to have cochlear implants. But that's not an option for them. They don't consider it an option. Like, yeah, this is the way your life is. But that message is conveyed through just the softest, most empathetic vessel in Paul Racy. So, like, there's just, he is rigid in the sense that he throws Ruben out, but he throws him out with, like, feather wings on a soft mattress.
Well, he knows what's best for him. What's best for Ruben is to toss his ass out.
Yeah.
Because,
and, like, he's being sneaky. He was never explicitly told, don't get a cochlear implant. But Ruben kind of knows.
He knew.
Because he's very sneaky about it.
He knew. Absolutely.
Yeah. Anything else on Sound of Metal?
Great movie.
Yeah.
Movie. I want to go party in France.
Sure, who doesn't?
I think the phrase silence is deafening works really well with the sound design that you've been talking about quite a bit.
Very strong. Very strong movie. Before we move on to The Handmaiden, we're going to play a quick round of the movie game, wherein we consult our giant spreadsheet of movies that we've rated over the years. We're up to 4,044, and we pick a random number.
Yeah, I added a bunch this week.
And the number we generated is 538. And number 538 is Thor Ragnarok.
Oh.
So, again, I'm going to start. I'm going to name an actor from Thor Ragnarok. Shane's going to name a movie that actor is in. We'll go Riley and then JR next. Riley,
how the fuck am I always last?
Fine, we'll go me, Shane, JR, Riley. And then...
it's more typical John racism bullshit.
Yeah. Ridiculous.
Okay, Thor Ragnarok. Tessa Thompson is in that.
Oh, Creed.
Sure. JR?
Yes, I'm trying to think. I'm trying to make it hard, but I'm not going to. We'll go Michael B. Jordan.
Okay.
Michael B. Jordan is also in Black Panther.
Sure, along with Angela Bassett.
I should have got this one. You're not going to get it. Don't do it.
She and How Stella Got Her Groove Back.
Are you fucking kidding me? Yes.
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 Yes. He's like, he's just thinking black women, black women, black women.
Please don't let me say it to be Alfred Woodard.
Okay. I will go with Regina King.
Oh, was she in that movie where they, Widows? Was she in Widows?
Oh, I'm afraid not.
She wasn't? Okay. Well, I'm out.
Regina King was in... You know, let's say Jerry Maguire.
Renee Zellweger.
Chicago.
Along with Catherine Zeta-Jones.
Who was in...
Shane, you're doing so good this week.
I know, this is exciting. She was in... Oh, fuck. She in Zorro?
Yes.
She was in The Mask of Zorro. Yeah, we'll accept it.
Was that Antonio Banderas?
It was.
Okay. Thank God.
He was in Desperado.
No one else is in Desperado. I'll challenge you on that.
Salma Hayek?
Shit. Yeah, of course.
Okay,
yeah.
So Salma Hayek to JR.
Salma Hayek was in, what was that movie we watched? God damn it.
Sure.
You know what? Fuck it. I can't remember the name of that movie. I'm going to say Wild Wild West.
Oh, I got a handy in that one.
All right. Oh, God. giant metal spiders really, really get changed.
You know, it was a pretty bad movie.
What year was that? 1999, man.
Yeah, baby.
Same year as The Matrix.
Kevin Klein is in that movie.
I should know this, but I've got nothing.
Sure. So. Fish Called Wanda.
Yeah.
Las Vegas.
Man, the only one I missed was the one I missed on.
Yeah.
Ah, well. All right, that's one for me. We'll see what happens in our next two rounds of the movie game. But in the meantime, we're going to talk about The Handmaiden. This is a movie adapted from, I think, one of the best titled novels maybe ever, The Fingersmith by Sarah Waters.
God damn, yeah.
Directed by Park Chan-wook, moved from The Fingersmith's setting of Victorian England to colonial Korea when it was taken over by Japan. I mentioned directed by Park Chan-wook. He of Old Boy and Stoker and other Korean movies. I like to talk about on this podcast the cool guy choices, where like if you ask a cool guy what their favorite Tarantino movie is, they might say Jackie Brown. If you ask them what their favorite Coen Brothers movie, they might say Miller's Crossing. I think if you ask a cool guy who your favorite Korean director is, it's Park Chan-wook instead of like I think most people would say Bong Joon-ho because he's like in the zeitgeist and he makes movies with bigger crossovers, but give me Park Chan-wook any day of the week. And this is arguably his best movie. Round the horn real quick, Shane. Well,
I've watched 25 minutes.
Okay.
I liked it.
JR, Handmaiden?
Great. Everything about it. Great.
Riley, Handmaiden?
Well, John, you just spent 200 words talking about two different Korean directors. And if you asked 100 Americans to name one Korean director, 99 totally of them would say who? But yeah, this movie was awesome. This is one that I've considered watching many times and was glad someone finally chose it.
Oh, this was your first time seeing it?
This was my first time seeing it.
Fantastic. All right, I'm going to put my first question to you then, Riley. Is this merely one of the horniest movies ever made, or is this the horniest movie ever made?
I'm going to reject your premise. no, not at all. This was a good movie. Without
the one horn. Does not preclude the other. A good movie can be horny.
No, it can, but like the movie itself isn't horny. It's a really good movie whose characters are good at seducing one another.
I think the sweat beads on Suki's lip as she's grinding
Hideko.
Yes, Hideko. As she's grinding her tooth, would disagree with you. I think the movie is itself horny.
The bath was quite hot, and you were just showing, although my joke was about your masturbation was stepped over from the last round, you're just showing that you've been trying to blind yourself for 20 years.
Shane?
I was just going to say, Old Boy is almost equally as horny.
Sure, but like
in a weird way too.
Park Chan-wook makes horny movies.
Yeah,
he made a movie about horny vampires. He made a movie about horny
Sympathy for Lady Vengeance is pretty horny as well.
Made a movie about horny Korean turn of the century handmaidens and their ladies. It's just a theme for him. This is the apotheosis of his horniness. I don't say that negatively. Again, like movies, I feel like have lost a lot of horniness. Especially big budget movies.
No one in the Avengers has sex.
Nobody. I don't even think they're really attracted to each other, despite Riley's, dialing in on the all-time bittersweet romance between the Scarlet Witch and Vision, which I've seen 4 episodes of WandaVision so far, and I don't know.
it's a weird show, but
it's a weird show.
It pays off.
I feel like I cracked it, and there's 6 episodes left.
Have cracked it, but it still pays off.
Yeah. All right. Okay.
Yeah, I agree, Sean.
Everybody cracked
sure it. The WandaVision does not have in its subsequent 6 episodes is what I assume to be the world's first vagina's eye view shot. Exceptionally horny. Kudos to you, Park Chan-wook. We mentioned the tooth-smoothing scene. Arguably the best scene in the movie, just the fine details of that. And a classier synonym for horny would be sensual, but the movie is also very in tune with what things feel like and taste like. Like that lollipop and the temperature of the bath and what it smells like, what the clothes feel like. And this just persists throughout the movie. Like it's obsessed with how things look and feel and smell and taste, and that's part of horniness. It's all of a piece. It's just as horny when Hideko is eating like grains of rice one by one as it is, and It's surprisingly tasteful sex scenes, like more tasteful than I remembered. Like one of my favorite memories of one of our mutual friends, we'll call him Micah F. He had a bad day in Vegas. Was that his bachelor party or was that our friend's bachelor party?
When he was in the shower the whole day?
Yes.
That was his bachelor party.
It was your classic curled up in the shower, head down, water on. There weren't any balls hanging down. It was super tasteful.
Okay.
Super tasteful. He's never looked better, arguably. But
so you describing Micah F is making me think of the numerous times CJ would flood the shower.
Yes.
And the 103-104 connection.
Do you know about this?
I don't.
He it would have been Sean and I's freshman year. He actually passed out in the shower with the shower on, and his butt cheek plugged the hole.
Oh my god!
And it flooded the entire.
I feel like this is
three rooms.
A different story would have like had his intestines pulled out of his ass.
Yeah,
like, kind of where.
Well, that's what we tell the kids.
Yikes!
Yeah, that's final. That's a
house with CJ.
That's right.
That's Final Destination 4. That's an actual scene.
Anyways. Like, in comparison to, like, a previous lesbian romance we watched, like, Blue is the Warmest Color, where that movie was, like, almost pornographic. The Handmaiden, I mean, so much of it is about old-timey porn and, like, woodcuts and oil paintings and all this kind of shit. And, like, so many frames of it could very well be taken from the movie and put in one of these old pervy books. It's great. I'm ranting and raving. This is a great movie. This is a fucking great movie. Anybody want to get a word in edgewise? JR, anything?
What? No, I loved it.
Okay.
I'm not going to say it wasn't great. I was the one that suggested it after I had already seen it.
Yeah.
I loved this movie.
It was a good one to throw in the trio. This is a twisty film from a director who makes a lot of twisty movies. We mentioned Old Boy. Old Boy is definitely his most famous movie, but most of his movies have some kind of twist. This movie has like twists on twists on twists on twists. I'd be curious to know. I would imagine everything is pretty well adapted directly from the, again, great title, The Fingersmith. The place where the
person gotta be his most famous movie though, right?
Do what?
About Old Boy, Snowpiercer.
Oh, my friend, that's Bong Joon-ho.
No, it's not.
Oh, my friend.
Oh, you're right. No, he produced Snowpiercer.
I wouldn't bet. Surprise me at all. Like all the Mexican directors, Cuarón and Iñárritu and Del Toro, they all work together all the time. It wouldn't surprise me if, or they all like produce each other's movies and like they're always thanked first in the credits. It wouldn't surprise me if there's the same kind of like camaraderie amongst weirdo South Korean directors
associated with it. But you're right, Bong is the director on that.
Yeah.
Can we get these Asian directors to work cinematography with our directors? Like, their movies just look better.
I mean, yeah, that's hard to disagree with.
Well, they lean into shit looking cool. Like, there's like, yeah, we're gonna make this scene look cool as shit. It's gonna be awesome. And American people are like, meh. Can we have a CGI monster fighting a CGI monster in the background?
Well, stay tuned for next month at the Mutual Movie Club. I don't think, especially these two directors, Bong Joon-ho that we're talking about and Park Chan-wook, who directed The Handmaiden, they don't make naturalistic movies. They make like these extremely melodramatic, elevated, high concept movies in a lot of ways. And they're just, when you're operating on that kind of like heightened level, I think you can really, really focus on like framing and set design, especially in The Handmaiden, where just like everything, for plot reasons and just because why the fuck not, it looks awesome. Everything is just calculated and on purpose, and you feel like every detail has been like poured over. Like even like the peephole that Hideko uses to watch Suki, you can like hear the click of it. You can like almost feel the click of it. It's incredibly detailed.
This movie felt like watching a Kubrick film in that way. Very deliberate about everything, but especially The Shining, where you've got like every shot is like perfectly down the hallway, perfectly, like you've got this mirror on tons of the shots is just a mirrored hallway or mirrored rooms, like when the Hideko is reading, and they open up the back. The lady opens up the, slides the windows back, or the door back, and the windows, it's snowing outside, and she's sitting perfectly in it. And then they pan it back over, and it's five guys sitting on one side of the room, five guys sitting on the other side of the room with a little hallway and all the library on the back. I mean, like you said, it's in the words of, it's cinema. the white guy.
Some information. I mean, and like, and that's a really good example, like, compliment what I was saying, where like, that scene is perfectly arranged because Park Chan-wook wants it and because the characters want it. Like, they've figured out all this needs to look an exact certain way, and it's all timed out perfectly and arranged perfectly because that's just part of what they're trying to, what the uncle, the perv uncle, is trying to convey to his potential clients. And it's just a perfect synchronization of like character and director, and it's part of what makes The Handmaiden so goddamn awesome. The fact I might read The Fingersmith. I don't know. The fact that this is adapted, there's like with Parasite from Bong Joon-ho last year, you got a lot of explainers for white people about like, this is what this means, and this is what this means, and this is what they're referencing here. I have a feeling that that is exactly true for The Handmaiden as well, but on more like a historical, with a lot of like historical context. There's levels that I can't even begin to like fully appreciate, I feel like, based on all of these characters like pretending to be Japanese and despising Korea, even though everybody in the movie is Korean. Except for Hideko, is that right? I believe Hideko is Japanese. But everybody else is like either a fake Japanese, or everybody else is a real Korean and pretending to be Japanese or pretending to be someone they're not. But in a lot of cases, that identity is like divided along colonized lines. I'd be really curious how that applies to The Handmaiden. Like maybe it's an Irish maid, everybody's pretending to be Irish, pretending to be Scottish, and trying to infiltrate like an English estate. I find all that extremely interesting. And it all goes along really well with, like, so much of the movie is about, like, male insecurity. Like, you can't, no matter how high up in society you are as a dude, you can't look cool adjusting your boner. You're always going to look like a perv.
Accurate.
It's the great equalizer. No matter how fancy your trousers are, you're going to look stupid and you're going to be embarrassed. And there's a lot of adjusting boners in The Handmaiden.
I usually work out when I watch these movies.
Sure.
Uncomfortable.
Tasteful. We mentioned how tasteful it is.
And if you do want to read this book, I would gladly explore Fingersmith with you.
That sounds like fun. You could read it to each other.
I'm glad that it was adapted Korea, Japan, because it would have been much less sexy as a swarthy Scottish chick.
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing. You could see that. They made a TV, like, what is it called, a mini series or whatever?
I might just take the shortcut and watch that instead of actually reading the book.
Don't do that.
And if the mini series is called The Fingersmith, so much the better, because again,
it is indeed it is called The Fingersmith.
Fantastic. There's two things that always work on me in this movie. One is a good actor pretending to be a shitty actor. I love that. I like probably like the ideal of that is like Bryan Cranston in Breaking Bad, and you can see him like get better and better and better at lying over the course of the series. Here, I don't have their names in front of me, but the actress that plays Suki is such a terrible actress when she's pretending to not be in on the scam. I love that kind of stuff. I absolutely love it. Compared to like Hideko, who is always the actress is doing a fantastic job portraying someone who was also a great actress. I just love those levels. A lot of fun. And the other thing I really love is the reveal of someone drawing poorly. to mention Archer, there's a great joke in Archer about Archer is on a desert mission. Archer gets bit by a snake. The flunky has to draw the snake, and he's describing, reticulated, blah, 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 and fangs this long. Exactly, like by the centimeter, and then he turns it around. It looks like a dick with like eyes drawn on. That's just that kind of stuff. Oh, that works on me. I don't know why exactly. maybe because I'm terrible at drawing, and like the reveal that someone else is just really connects with me. There's one of those in The Handmaiden. I loved it. I laughed a lot. This is a very funny movie, not only for that moment, but for a lot of moments. Go ahead, Shane.
Have you ever
I'm really energized by this movie.
You are very energized. I'm afraid for you to stand up.
Everything's fine.
I'm 2 feet away. Have you ever seen like those the memes of Renaissance drawings where like these middle-aged people have never seen like they've never seen a lion, so they're guessing what a lion looks like, and that shit, it is
I have not heard of that.
Yes.
You would love it, John, if you like those reveals.
Are they drawing on like nice canvas with like proper paint? Oh, that's accoutrements. They have all the atmosphere. Then it turns around and looks like fucking garbage.
Yeah, it's like I've never actually been to Africa. I just have to guess what this one dude that went to Africa tells me lion looks like.
All right, homework project. Two homework projects. Watch the Fingersmith miniseries. Watch whatever this meme.
I'll find some memes for you.
Fantastic. This has been a one-sided conversation. Again, I can hear the speed of my voice. This is a great movie. I love this movie. The last thing I'm going to single out for appreciation is the Count. The way he describes his ultimate life goal of ordering wine without looking at the price, being one of those guys. That, I would imagine, was a line pulled directly from the Fingersmith. Just because it's ubiquitous across all cultures, especially like Japan/Korea at this period of time, when like Japan is desperately wanting to be part of the West as opposed to its traditional place in the East. It's a great line.
My life goal is be a guy who just wears white t-shirts.
Nothing wrong with that. Yeah, Bob from Bob's Burgers, he's doing okay.
Yeah,
he's doing all right. Yeah,
I can figure out how to do that.
Anything else? Anything else about The Handmaiden? Shane, finish The Handmaiden.
I will. Thanks.
You got it. Before we move on to our final movie, we're going to play another round of the movie game.
Random.
We're going to pick a number.
Generate. Oh!
407.
Oh, we're way down
Let's
there.
Let's find out what that is. Okay.
Fairy tale, a true story.
I'm going to guess, that's a cooker special.
Yeah, we're not going to do that.
We're not going to do that one.
Dude, 1997 French-American fantasy drama.
Oh.
2591 is Trust. That's a documentary.
Yeah.
That's John's special. He's a guy that watches a lot of documentaries. 3661. Fuck. Cujo? I can't do Cujo.
Dog. Your dog was in it. Name another movie with the dog.
Dude.
Let's start with Cujo. I'm starting Cujo. We're going to say more.
Yeah.
No, we're doing Dog is in Cujo. JR, name another movie with a dog, and we'll go from there. All right.
We strike out 5 times with a number generator. Yeah. I guess we just,
Okay. Another movie with a dog. I'm going to say
Black Beauty.
Hey, fuck you. I'm up, John. I'm going to say Beethoven.
If you can't name an actor that was in Beethoven, Riley, you can always demand that JR do that. If you think
he's. To me, okay. I know actors in that movie because I've seen the movie. I can't think of the man's name. The dad is one of those I'm in a shitload of movies guy.
Yep.
Groden? Charles Groden.
Yeah. Nice.
Charles Groden is in Midnight Run.
Midnight Run has Steve McQueen.
What?
I don't know. I've never seen that.
Midnight Run to JR.
Oh, fuck. I don't know.
Robert De Niro.
There it is.
I want Cape Fear.
Juliette Lewis is in Cape Fear.
I have no idea who that is.
Riley.
Juliette Lewis is also in Natural Born Killers.
There you go. So is Tom Sizemore.
Tom Sizemore sweats a lot.
He sure does.
An alcoholic. Black Hawk Down.
Orlando Bloom.
Oh, okay. Lord of the Rings, Fellowship of the Ring.
Cate Blanchett.
Is she in Aviator?
Yes, along with Alan Alda.
Alan Alda is in And the Band Played On.
Ooh! I mean, I got nothing to do but push it back on you.
Matthew Modine?
All right, that's a winner for Sean.
Wow. All right. Oh, Alan Alda reference.
Holy fuck, what a pull.
I feel like, was that an HBO movie? It still counts. I'm not trying to undercut.
Yeah. Okay. It's a good movie.
Yeah, it's got 100% on Rotten Tomatoes, so.
What, another movie with 100% on Rotten Tomatoes is I Care a Lot.
No, it doesn't. No,
no way. No fuck way.
It's 81.
Oh, whatever
it is. It's absurd.
This is a movie directed by Jay Blakeson, who is a man, by the way, loosely inspired by the case of April Parks, who was a caretaker for, or a legal guardian, court-assigned legal guardian for elderly people. And this woman proceeded to drain their estate for her own personal benefit. And that's essentially what happens in I Care a Lot, except for the stand-in for April Parks, Marla, played by Rosamund Pike. She gloms on to the wrong elderly person, the mother, secret mother of a Russian mobster who makes life difficult for Marla. Just going around the horn real quick, let's start with Riley. You did not see this movie, but you're going to stick around for what could very well be a lively conversation. JR, what did you think of I Care a Lot?
I thought it was fun. I was not expecting this movie to be good whatsoever. I just figured there'd be some fighting in it, and I got that. And so I was like, I enjoyed it.
I thought this movie was quite well made. I think Jay Blakeson probably has a really good movie. It's not necessarily this one, but I think he has a really good movie in his future. I think I really admire the balls of this movie to staff it with defiantly unlikable characters from top to bottom. And I just have some level of appreciation. I have to have some level of appreciation for that. I think it's the rare movie that has that doesn't. We'll talk about this at a later point, but I think it's one of the rare movies that really is not interested in softening anybody as the movie goes on. We'll talk about if that's actually the case or not. But Shane, what did you think about I Care a Lot?
This movie fucking sucks. Okay. This fucking sucks from the beginning to the middle to the end. Every part sucks, and it somehow manages to suck even worse at parts where you're like, how could they possibly, holy shit, they made it suck worse. It fucking sucks. It's stupid. And it's offensive because they try to play it off as if this is like real. And it's not fucking real.
Like this is a real problem in society.
I mean, elder abuse is a real problem in society, but not like this. This is fucking stupid and unrealistic and dumb. It's all dumb. The motivations are all fucked up except for Peter Dinklage's character. And that's it. Like, he's the only one who makes any fucking sense in this stupid piece of shit movie.
So, main character Marla
sucks.
Arguably, it's hard to say the worst character, like morally worst in the movie. She is up against Peter Dinklage's Russian mobster character.
Yeah, she's the morally worst. Bro,
she's morally the worst. Come on.
Not only does she have a shitty outlook on life and the cliche, stupid fucking I'd read one nihilist book outlook on life. She's also a copy of the Gone Girl bullshit.
We'll talk about
the narration.
That.
I mean,
I think the movie would be. Shane thinks it's a failure already. I think if the movie tried to make me feel sorry for Marla, it would be a failure. I don't think it does. What do you guys think, JR? Do you think this movie wants me to feel sympathy for her?
I don't think it wanted you to feel sympathy for anyone.
Okay, good. Yeah.
I think it was just like, here's some shit that's happening, and she fucked up. She did it too much. She should have just been happy, decided to go overboard, and fucking got to pay for it at some point. I think that's how they present it. It's just like, hey, this lady fucked up, and now she's got to go against these people. That's why I liked it. I didn't think there was a lot of like, it was, to me, I watched the movie, and it's just like, here's a movie that, like you said, is well made. It's decently made, like pretty good made. And you're just like, I'm just here to be entertained in this movie. That's all I was looking for, is like the entertainment. I wasn't looking for any like good acting. I wasn't looking for anything like that. I presented to me as a lady's going up against some forces that she doesn't know about. And I'm like, oh, I'm in. That's good enough for me.
We're pretty much of a mind in that. As it's dawning on me that this movie is going to be about this just to the core awful person, it becomes an experiment of like, can this movie pull it off? And like my radar for what the question is, my radar for, is it going to soften her in any way with backstory, with any kind of like current events or topical or cultural dynamic? Is it going to do any of that? My radar is extremely heightened because that's like, that's an easy like automatic grade deduction as it does it. Like you're trying to excuse this terrible behavior because X, Y, Z. I do think her relationship with her girlfriend, that's a relatively pure part of the movie. I think the movie does want us to think that they do love each other in a way. There's no opportunity for like when there is opportunities for one of them to leave each other that they don't. So that's some tiny level of humanization. Shani's shaking his head. And I think the other way is men repeatedly hit her or spit in her face or whatever. And there's always, and in those instances,
I can't stop.
The movie takes a beat in those instances for everybody to realize what just happened.
It's fucking performance. The movie has no consistent tone. About the best thing you can say is like, see, women can be shitheads too. But they still can't that off very well. Because like, what the fuck
There's always that, the men are always going to be like physically stronger. And in the movie's telling, they're always going to resort to, they know that inherently. And they're always going to resort to violence first.
Men,
it's never going to be a fair fight, really.
Except for she fucking kung fu'd ninja spied shit and took out henchmen.
Sure. I mean, she had like a taser and
that's when it got
dart gun, I think.
No.
Is that right?
No.
Okay.
They put a pillowcase over his head and hit him with a bat on the way out when they're breaking the woman out of the fucking thing.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
It's fucking stupid. That's fucking stupid.
Okay.
It's just offensive. It's offensive.
But do you think the movie had sympathy for her?
I think a little bit because it's like, see, this look at this woman who has to go through this shit, even though she's a shithead, but she still had to go through some shit. And it just, and I don't know if that's the whole tone. I feel like it's just in there a little bit. It kind of switches up, which is why this is, again, so bad. If it was entirely campy, dark comedy, yeah, but it's not funny. Like, it's not funny. None of this is funny. The funniest part of this movie is Peter Dinklage eats dessert.
Sure.
She vapes when she gets serious.
I mean, let's talk about the vaping.
Jesus
Christ. I didn't read any. I read about the real life inspiration because I was curious as to whether all this is just, and you'll inform us a little bit more, being the person most familiar with this kind of thing, about like the veracity of the process. Hang on. But that's the only reading I did was that, okay, there is some level of real basis for what she's doing. Probably not on the level of, I run what sure looks like an upright business, and I seem to be well known in the community for doing exactly what it is I'm doing.
Right. That makes no sense.
Okay. But I didn't read any of the director's talk. I didn't read any of like Rosamund Pike's commentary.
Oh God. Whatever. It's so bad.
I don't want to.
Good. It's cringy.
But you found a quote.
Yes.
About Jay Blakeson talking about her theoretical failed vape store past. My radar was heightened for that kind of thing because it's if you tell me a sad story about somebody, you're making a choice to tell a story. You didn't have to tell it. Why'd you tell it? You told it to me because you want me to feel something about this character. It's not in the movie. That's good. But it would explain the scene where she is explaining to like doped up Diane Wiest, Peter Dinklage's mother, about her plan and how this is how it's going to go. And her vape pen is prominently placed in the scene. She's waving it around.
Multiple scenes are doing
multiple
that.
Multiple scenes. So if her vape pen represented...
The stupidest looking hobby of all time.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I think the movie knows that.
Does it? Because
I think so.
The movie's either funny or it's not, and it's definitely not fucking funny.
I think it's making her look absurd. I think so.
That now, according to Pike in interviews, it was like, this is to show I'm a dragon. And this is when she really turns it out. Because she takes a hit of a vape and then...
I think it can be both things. I don't know. Like, if it was like a visual reminder of, like, I tried to play by the rules and I failed.
This movie took itself...
Which, whatever. That's a really stupid way to view... the various failures of capitalism. I had every small business should succeed. I don't think anybody would say that.
Yeah, that's dumb.
And it didn't make it in the movie, so we're just talking about extra textually. But like, there's got to be a reason that this she's waving this really stupid looking vape pen around again. Maybe I don't.
You don't have to say it's a stupid looking vape pen. It's just understood.
Yes. It's really interesting that of these three movies, the one that I connected the most with, I'm like, I understand everything this movie is trying to tell me is the Korean one. Not everything, because we mentioned like the colonial past and like all I feel like Handmaiden was like switching back and forth between Korean and Japanese all the time. But the vaping and I Care a Lot and the punk and Sound of Metal are more foreign to me than anything in The Handmaiden. I just don't fucking get it. Shane, you mentioned the comparison to Gone Girl.
Yeah.
I find her in Gone Girl so much more sympathetic. I think at least she's aggrieved in Gone Girl.
Oh, yeah. I think that's accurate. Yeah.
Marla is just the worst all the way down. We talked about how much sympathy generated for her. I like her cockroach level of survivability, I think, is the most sympathetic. Like her kicking herself out of like the car as it's falling into the water.
Oh, after
that was good.
No, it wasn't. That was immediately. That was
good. It was good after acting, and it was good. It was informed by the character. Like
no,
her,
it wasn't.
Her will to live.
They
funneled
alcohol.
Sure. Yeah.
A pint of alcohol into her body through her car into the water, and she was able to swim out.
I think we got to account for some level of adrenaline. You know, the mom lifting the car off of her kid.
No, you don't.
Some level.
No,
of
you
that.
Don't.
I don't know. I was okay with it.
Shane, my God, dude. What other movie have you hated at this level?
I don't know how I finished it.
How early did it lose you?
5 minutes.
Okay.
After the first court scene,
I want to say is the court scene.
We're supposed
to finished it because of your dedication to the hatred.
Yeah, honestly, yeah. If I didn't want to rant on this podcast, I would not have fucking finished that shit. And I'm glad I finished it so I can tell people don't watch this bullshit.
I would imagine the physical sensation of watching this movie between the two of us was not dissimilar. Like, I felt so uncomfortable watching the movie because I hated everybody in it. I don't know. I kind of watched Succession for the same reason. Like, I want all these people to fail terribly. I didn't really get that, and I Care a Lot. I like Succession better as a whole.
Next morning.
That's not my preferred method of viewing movies or TV by any means, but the commitment to the bit is what sells this movie to me.
But there's no commitment.
I'm going
to
see plus right here.
It's so inconsistent.
The commitment is everybody sucks, and we're not going to soften.
But she's also super awesome and super effective, despite the fact that she risks her entire
career. I don't doubt
that
there are people who are super effective who suck in the world.
She sucks, but she's not actually super effective. Like, nothing about her character is consistent. You have a whole business model of committing fraud, massive fraud, governmental fraud, with multiple people, but you're just going to go after the Russian mob instead of taking a $500,000 payment. Why?
Mental illness.
No.
Shorthand.
But but she was not shown as that. She's super effective, and she was super
just
good at
a
job,
level
right?
of a, like a level of obsession and like refusing to back down. I do think at a certain point that shades into like something is wrong with you.
I don't know. This movie sucks. It makes no sense. It just makes no sense. There's nothing consistent about it. It makes sense.
I like that she died at the end.
That was great. I could have watched that over and over.
Yeah, that was fine.
And that was the best part, because it actually did bring that guy back around the beginning, killer.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Which, in essence, makes the entire movie unnecessary, because the conflict she has at the beginning of the movie is the exact same one that serves as her comeuppance at the very end.
Yep.
I wish there would have been a little bit more media criticism in that final, like, 5-10 minutes. Like, this business is so nakedly, and I don't know if this is an actual business or not. Probably someone has monetized this, like guardianship.
Yeah, it's really hard to do that. Family law is really hard. So this whole courtroom thing.
Yeah, here we get into.
First one is so insanely bad. There's only one lawyer there. Which is nuts. The guardian wouldn't be just. She's acting like a fucking lawyer this entire movie. And even in the opening scene, the son is talking, making legal arguments or whatever the fuck, and the attorney's not talking, the judge wouldn't even be talking to that guy. Like, none of that is realistic. You can't just, and a guardian can't just go out in the community and find someone, oh, this doctor said this person might be all right, and get no representation at trial. It's stupid. It's stupid how they did all it is totally unnecessary. You can say, hey, this doctor recommended this, or I don't know, come up with a better fucking story other than this doctor said this, and this woman just all of a sudden gets her life taken away without any recourse, because that's not how it fucking goes.
Again, that Diane Wiest is, you know, the mom of a mobster, probably a little dirty herself, but seeing her life get taken away, that was really impactful. Like, but I thought that was really well, it's totally contrived, but just the step-by-step of it, and how good Marla is at her fake job.
Yeah.
Of taking away all the potential avenues where things go wrong. But
it's not impressive when you actually take a step back and think about how unrealistic all that. That is a cartoon.
Okay.
And badly, like, that is, hey, six-year-old, how do you think courts work? Hey, six-year-old, how do you think selling a house works? Oh, people just show up and paint it and you just sell it. That's it.
I mean, man, sometimes you just got to get past that. Like,
yeah, I can't.
But like, I'm not out here. Listen, and
do that shit.
I'm not out here. Okay. Well, then my argument died right there. So
I don't know.
You said don't pretend to be a smart movie. I was going to say something about, I'm not watching Silicon Valley and being like, this isn't how programming works.
You for sure. Like, sure.
But then when you said don't pretend to be, so I was like, okay.
Well. You should, I mean, do that.
That's a good comparison. Silicon Valley, because, like, Silicon Valley, a lot of the process happens like in a cut from day to night or from night to day. Like, Richard was up all night programming and the problem is solved. Whereas in I Care a Lot, we would see the equivalent of the programming. Like, we have a pretty good sense of how her business works and, like, all the steps that she needs to do to get a person from free in the world to locked up in a nursing home. All people she got to pay off. This is a movie that's more concerned with process, and process movies automatically sure feel like they're trying to teach you something. Like, this is how this thing that you might not be concerned with or might not be aware of, yeah, is how this works.
There are dirty doctors. There are dirty judges.
Yeah, like, what would the scam look like in lawyers. Real life? I didn't read deep into
it. Not like this.
Okay.
Not naked like this.
Like, how does a person get assigned a guardian that's not in their
family? I mean, there's got to be a lot more process, especially if you're wealthy. You're going to have your own lawyer and shit. So this is so... But yeah, but you should, like... But even Silicon Valley, like, you should... Like, I can't imagine when you read articles, like, well, you know, Mike Judge, you know, he used to work in tech, and how bad you would roll your eyes back about the depiction of Silicon Valley reading an article that says that.
Hmm. I guess I don't understand what you're saying there.
Like,
Mike Judge's working in tech was more similar to in a tech and office space than in Silicon Valley, though, right?
Right. But then everyone with Silicon Valley will say, this is actually, it's kind of an accurate show because, you know, Mike Judge used to work in tech. So this is why Silicon Valley is very accurate. And then I can't imagine, like, so if someone said that about the law in this, like, someone once read an article about there are courtrooms, and this is how you know this is an accurate depiction of family law. And, like my eyes hurt from rolling in the back of my head watching this movie.
It does really depend. I bought the doctor. The doctor seemed fine.
Absolutely.
I would imagine that old people... some pretty sizable percentage of them aren't ideal patients.
Right.
And the doctor, I mean, her rooting interest is, I want to get rid of these difficult patients. And she, like, feeds them in.
Yeah.
To this. Well, she's getting... That's when the process kind of breaks down, is in the court. Because yes, that is a question of, Those court scenes are about who's making the better emotional argument. They're not citing, like,
right,
this and this and this.
For a judge...
It's not a technical argument that they're making. It's an emotional argument.
There are so many good lawyers out there that would roast that judge. You know, family law judges notoriously suck, but would roast that judge. I don't know. I posted about this, and a really good family law attorney around here was... I was like, I'm sure the courtroom scenes were accurate. And her response was just, you know... sarcasm and how awful it was, but yeah.
All right, lawyers, watch I Care a Lot is the big takeaway.
Don't do it. No one should watch this shit.
Yeah.
Your inability to explain her reaction just offers more support of my long-held theory that there needs to be a dismissive wanking motion emoji.
Yes. Yes. That's, yeah.
Haven't the kids figured one out yet? I mean, yeah, surely.
Sure they have. I think it's a fist with a eggplant.
I mean, it's not more than that. It's probably a weird animal. I don't know. I don't know how emojis work.
Yeah.
They come up as cursors on my phone.
Yeah, we're gonna work on that. So, I'm gonna figure out the MIDI text or whatever. No, is nice. That is that what it's called?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, all right.
Riley, can you think of a movie that just hates all of its characters all the way down and refuses to sympathize or humanize any of them?
A movie that just hates all of its characters and they're all completely worthless wastes of space.
Yeah.
Trainspotting?
Yeah, kind of. There's like the chemical dependency part of that, but I don't know. I don't know if those guys would call themselves addicts. Like, they just like doing heroin. Something to be said for that, probably.
Yeah. I was going to say Cowboy Joe.
Spring Breakers, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I thought Spring Breakers like its characters a little too much.
I don't think so. But. I don't think so. Again, maybe that falls in the vaping punk rock thing, where just like all those Spring Break scenes look like pure hell to me.
Cowboy Joe the one with the K-Fried C?
Yeah.
Okay, then yeah, that's a good answer.
All right, we got a tie in the movie game between myself and Riley, so we need to play one more round to do a tiebreaker. And that's not to say that JR or Shane can come in and
have a spoiler.
It's totally possible. We'll just have to see what number 1026 is.
Yeah, there's no way if Shane's pulling fucking shit with or not Shane. If Sean's pulling shit with Alan Alda in it, there's no chance of me winning.
I mean, this is great. Good podcast, by the way.
Great movie.
Alan Alda's pro science.
Yeah. 268, Warm Bodies.
Oh, my God.
From our first round here at the Media Community Club, back in, I want to say, 2014.
Oh, Killer Joe. There we go. Not Cowboy Joe. It's right there.
Oh, yeah. Killer Joe.
Isn't the first?
I think, like, the girl in Killer Joe is, like,
Gina Gershon?
Not that one.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So,
definitely not.
So, I'm up first. Is that what it is?
Warm Bodies. No, that's me. Warm Bodies.
You get to go first every time?
I do.
This is ass.
Okay, Warm Bodies has John Malkovich in it.
It does?
It does. Does it?
Earl, he's a bad guy.
Oh, I don't remember.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
John Malkovich is in Rounders.
The Shane style accent in that movie.
Yes.
Yeah, nailed it.
Thank you.
Pay that man his money.
Jesus Christ. I've seen this movie like 100 fucking times and I can't.
Nobody. Not a single person.
Yeah, what's his name? The white dude, man. Matt Damon.
There you go.
Just stop there.
Okay, so I would say Team America, but I don't know if he really lent his voice to that movie.
I mean, he did. Way to take a joke.
But Good Will Hunting.
Stellan Skarsgård is in that movie.
Stellan Skarsgård is in that movie. Damn, what a dick pulled from that.
He's wrapping it up.
Oh, man. He's just like so Stellan Skarsgård-y in every movie he's in.
Arguably the most attractive Skarsgård.
Well, I mean, arguably on that for sure. He's got. Oh, man. Hunt for Red October.
Actually, I think that's impossible. We gotta go to the internet for that one.
Yeah, he's in that.
This is the best pull I've ever had.
I'm gonna say Alec Baldwin.
We're confirming.
I know he's in it. I just watched this.
We can move on. Yeah, that's fine. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
so I just watched. Okay, Alec Baldwin is in...
he is confirmed. God damn, what a pull.
Glengarry Glen Ross.
What's the guy's name from Game of Thrones? Jonathan Pryce. Jonathan Pryce is in Glengarry Glen Ross.
He is a piece of shit.
Can you pull two in a row?
Oh, Jonathan Pryce.
Please.
I'm going to challenge you.
Jonathan Pryce gets chewed up by a sea drill in Tomorrow Never Dies.
Wow. All right.
Hell yeah.
Michelle Yao. Sean Riley.
She's in the Green Sword movie, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon.
Yep.
She is, along with, I can't remember what the other female lead's name is, or at least I'm not certain of it, so I'm going to say Chow Yun-Fat.
He's in a bunch of shit, man.
Yeah.
He's the one Asian dude in Pirates of the Caribbean, when they bring in the Asian guys. Is that Dead Man's Chest?
No, it's at World's End.
Yes.
But I was willing to accept Pirates of the Caribbean.
I think I agree. I'm fine with that.
I agree. It's a good poll.
So I'm done. Knightley.
Oh, Keira Knightley to me. Atonement.
Atonement has I don't know. I see the face. Can't put a name to the guy, so I'm out.
Atonement to Riley.
Saoirse Ronan.
Yep, she is in that movie along, and she is also in Brooklyn.
I did not see Brooklyn. It was great a popular movie, but I don't think I can name anybody in it. No.
Along with, I don't know exactly how to pronounce his name, but I'm going to say Domhnall Gleeson.
Yep, that's it.
Close enough. He's in Harry Potter, isn't he?
He's like one of the twins, I think. I don't know.
Yeah.
Oldest,
he's probably
Weasley. He's, I don't know. He's got red hair, so there's only so many jobs those guys can have. All right. I good pull shit. Up there, 2-1. Good job, everybody. We'll be back next month with more movies to talk about and more movie games to play when we discuss two new movies coming out on HBO Max. So we'll be talking about Godzilla versus Kong. Or is it Kong versus Godzilla? I honestly don't know. I don't know. Kong, I would think they win.
Kong
alphabetically, versus... just to be fair.
Yeah. I don't know.
Hmm. That movie, we're talking about the new Mortal Kombat, and we're also talking about Another Round. You can check out reviews of these three movies, as well as many others, at MunichMovie.club. You can like us on Facebook, follow our events there, and our news there, and a post there, at Munich Movie Club. Follow us on Twitter, at Munich Movie Club. We're on Instagram, under Munich Movie Club, where we really just post our week's reviews there, as well, links to our week's reviews there. I'm on Letterboxd at John_Kissel. I'd recommend follows there. I picked up a bunch of followers last week. That was fun. I'm up to 119.
Nice.
Yeah.
I'll follow you one day.
Whatever. Who cares? My life is small. anything to plug? Anything to plug, JR?
Yeah. Last B-Bender. Instagram will be picking back up. All my bees died over the winter, so I got new bees coming in about sweet. 3 weeks. Fun stuff.
Shane, anything?
Follow me, Tim's neighbor, Twitter. Don't follow me anywhere else.
Sean?
I'm not really worth following. You can follow Braden on Instagram. Mindy Riley.
All right, that is
from Violin Adventure.
That is Sean telling our listeners to follow a 14-year-old kid's Instagram.
It is my wife's Instagram, and it is, but it's only Braden playing violin.
Okay.
Yeah,
that's fine.
And he's
13. Oh, okay, excuse me. Thank you for joining me tonight, guys.
Thanks, John. Okay, honestly, guess what animal that is?
A mollusk? Like a snail?
Oyster.
It's got a face. Have a good night.
The mollusk wasn't a terrible guess, I guess.